Welcome to Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights, a podcast by coaches for coaches. Our guests share their hard-won wisdom to help you grow your coaching business and create a life of success. So get ready to unlock the blueprints to your success. Welcome everyone to today's episode. I'm absolutely thrilled that you're here. And I'm also excited to have Gary Chupik. His company is Elite Mindset, and he is a mental performance coach. So I'm excited to learn more about him. So welcome to the show, Gary. It's lovely to have you.
Yeah, and I'm very excited to be here.
Good stuff. So let's talk about your journey. How did you become an Elite Mindset? How did you start your business, Elite Mindset, and become that mental performance coach? I'm sure there's a story in there somewhere.
Yeah, there always isn't there. So mine came out of a midlife crisis in my mid-40s, and I had to decide what I wanted my midlife crisis to be. Did I want to, let's say, buy a Camaro or a Mustang, or did I want to rethink my life a little bit? And so I chose the latter, to rethink my life a little bit. And then through a series of amazing, what I would call divine appointments, I ended up meeting the mental performance coach of Russell Wilson, Trevor Moad. And Russell took me under his wing and mentored me. Then he eventually hired me. And so the rest is history.
That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about those two people, because people listening may not know who they are.
Yeah, so Russell Wilson at the time was the quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks. Then he went to Denver. Now he's with the Jets. And Trevor Moad was his mental performance coach. And so at that time, Trevor was, in my industry, Trevor was at the peak of the mountain, the top of Mount Everest. He was on ESPN, he was on ABC, he was on TV stations, he was everywhere. And so the idea of just spending a little bit of time with him was pretty overwhelmingly wonderful for me. And then he said, hey, do you want to meet again next month? And I was like a kid in the candy shop and said, my goodness, why wouldn't I want to do that? And so we met on a monthly basis for about a year, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll bet. Meeting with the top, learning from the best.
Yeah, learning from the best. And yet he gave me a lot of freedom to figure things out on my own. Like one of the things that he challenged me to do was not to accept his material, but create my own. And so one of his assignments for me was to develop my own mental performance process. And once I did that, he almost hired me on the spot when I did that, which was really cool. And so the rest is history. I spent a couple of years with his company and then went out of my own a couple of years later. So yeah, it's just been a lot of fun developing my own material. I don't read much of my competitors, mostly because I get jealous of how they say things. And so I try not to read my competitors' books and that kind of thing, or podcasts. But I do like to read research papers and then extract material from those kinds of documents and then find my own unique way of saying things.
Excellent. Yeah, it is your unique way. It's you. And that's great. Some people are just have a lot of experience in speaking, and they have people who are writing their content or their messaging. And we want the real you.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it makes things interesting. For example, we live in such an information saturated world where you could hear the same phrase or hear the same sentence or the same title about 300 times in a month. And so to try and say things a little bit differently, like, for example, thoughts are like calories. And if you have too many calories and you don't expend them, then you get overweight and lethargic. And it's the same thing with our thoughts. And if we have too many thoughts that we can't expend, and then we slow down and we get lethargic and we're not very nimble mentally. And so I just like to say things a little bit differently, like that kind of just put a little bit of a twist on it. And people tend to remember that kind of stuff.
That's brilliant. Thoughts are like calories. I'm totally going to remember that. Maybe we'll even title this podcast episode, Thoughts Are Like Calories. That's so awesome. So tell us a little bit about how you work with your clients. Obviously, you work with professional athletes, but do you work with other athletes that maybe aren't at that level?
Well, I do. Initially, I started working out with high school students and then college and then professional. But even that was a journey. And it's really interesting because when I was working with high school athletes, it was such a challenge to do that. And I was thinking like, well, if I can't work with a high school student or athlete, like what makes me think I could work with a college athlete or a pro athlete? And it just dawned on me that maybe I was aiming too low and that I was just fishing in the wrong pond. I knew I had the talent to be able to do that and the work ethic to do it, but it just wasn't the right pond for me. And so instead of shrinking back and retreating a little bit, I decided to press forward even harder. And then I went into the college world more and more, and then eventually into the pros. And I found my most success believe it or not, in the professional athlete realm. So what happened was Trevor Moad had really encouraged me to let my athletic skill, like my skill in the athletic world, overflow into the business world. And so we began to do more and more work in the business world because we found that what it takes to be a professional athlete isn't really that different to what it takes to be really good at what you do in business. There's so many similarities. And so we just began to work more and more in the business world. And so right now, I probably work about 50-50. It's pretty incredible, the split.
That's awesome. And I love that you recognized you were in the right place. You're just with the wrong people. Because
yeah,
it's a
true.
Different mentality, isn't it? Different age groups.
It's different age group was a reflection of who I was as well. Like, for example, working with a high school student or even a college student, they're just dealing with different issues. But I think because I had so much experience in leadership that I just identified with adults more. And that was just more, I have a more of a, I wouldn't say a militaristic, but more of a regimented strategic approach to mental performance. And I think when you're talking about like a high school athlete or a college athlete, it tends to be a little bit more raw, but I was very much a strategist. And so the pros really worked out for me because if they just followed my regimen, I knew that they would be successful, and they typically are.
Let me ask you this. You just reminded me of one of the Olympic athletes. I can't remember his name. He would do visualizations, and that's how he got through one of his competitions because his goggles fell off. He was in the water. So is that something that you incorporate? That just came to me.
I think most athletes will tell you that their number one strategy for mental performance is visualization. And there's a pretty simple reason for that, actually. And it actually crosses over to the business realm and even things that we do in our real life. And that is that when we can't find ourselves doing something that we really want to do, it's because, now get this, we can't see ourselves doing it. And because we can't see ourselves doing it, even when we attempted those things, we're not successful. And a big part of the reason is because we can't see with our mind, see ourselves doing it. And so to spend time visualizing ourselves doing whatever it is that we want to accomplish, I think that's really helpful to us.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about the types of businesses that you work with.
This is maybe the most surprising thing, and it's been actually one of the most joyful things in the past year, is being invited to speak at conferences and ones that you would never imagine would want to hire a mental performance coach to be a speaker. So maybe I can say that my last three or four conferences was Google, BVS, which was Best Veterinarian Supplies Conference, AI conferences that I've spoken. I was the first keynote speaker at an AI conference, and I've spoken at Google. So I never know where I'm going to get invited, but that's part of the fun of my life right now, is just the unpredictability of who wants to learn mental performance, because I think we've really made a mistake in the mental health world. And it's a shortcoming that we have not presently fixed, especially in the educational system. And that is that we tend to think of mental health as only two pillars. So we'll have a crisis. So when someone is in crisis, they will turn to mental health strategies that will help them. And then that next pillar would be what I call the coping pillar. So we're helping people cope with whatever it is that they're struggling with. And I think that's really wonderful, but I think it's just falls way short of what is possible. In other words, I think there's two more pillars. One of them is an elevate pillar. And by the way, between these pillars are bridges of things that we can do to get from one pillar to the next. And so that elevate pillar is really important, where we can live an elevated life. And then the final pillar is to live transcendently, so that you're pouring into others and you're missions oriented, you're very community oriented. You want to welcome people into your life. You want the fruit of your labor to grow on other people's trees. And so it's just a different way of living. So I think just to help people cope with their challenges is not enough.
I love that. Oh, I love your philosophy. That's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about your process. So you meet with someone and have an evaluation with them, and based on their goals, you put together a structure for them, or do you use the same one for everyone? Because, you know, it is mental performance. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And one of the reasons why I created that mental health bridge assessment was to help me understand where people felt like they were at. So if they were in, let's say, in that or near that coping pillar, and I could assign tasks for them to do. If they were in the crisis or near the crisis pillar, I could help them cross the bridge to the coping, give them coping mechanisms.
Okay, quick pause. This episode is sponsored by our Profit Clarity Masterclass. If you've been avoiding your finances and quietly hoping it won't catch up with you, we want you to hear this. You're not failing. This is incredibly common for most business owners. Most people don't avoid money because they don't care. They avoid it because it feels heavy, confusing, or stressful. In our free live masterclass, we're going to show you a clear, more supportive way to handle your finances so your business can actually support your life. You can learn more and save your seat at lessmathmoremoney.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
So yeah, there's a little bit of an assessment that goes on. And sometimes what people think they need is not exactly what they actually need. And so there are some question asking conversations to have around those things. But I think for the most part, people are, they know themselves pretty well. They have a pretty good indication of what some of the obstacles that they're facing are. And a lot of them, I think, come from from strange and odd places. Like, for example, I'm really passionate about mindset being an actual equation. So I think there is a sort of a popular equation that might be communicated, let's say, in pop culture, which is mindset is a conditioned set of beliefs that drive behavior. But in my worldview, and when I'm helping a client, it's much more complex than that. But it took me about 7 years to figure out what mindset actually is. And if I could figure out an equation, then I can pinpoint where I need to help someone. And so for me, mindset, it comes from initially from experiences that we've had in the past. And then from those experiences that we have thoughts and feelings associated with that experience. Now that experience might have happened to us, or we might have initiated or somehow participated in that experience. But nonetheless, we do have thoughts and feelings about that particular experience. But then we have our response to our own thoughts and feelings. So now we get to choose how we respond to those things. And when you're younger, you aren't aware that you have choices. You just have a response. But if you put all of that together, then you form a belief, and primarily about yourself. So now you've created a belief about yourself from the experience, your thoughts and feelings, and your response. And if you put all of that together, you have a mindset. But it doesn't end there. There's one more step that Andy McKay from the Seattle Mariners taught me. He goes, Gary, that's an incredibly wonderful equation, except it's missing one component. And I said, do tell, I'm dying to know. And he said that the new mindset must result in new and improved behaviors. Because you can't just change a mindset, but participate in the things that perhaps are unhealthy to you. And so to have the mindset result in new and improved behaviors, in a way, is like cycling back to the very beginning and creating a new experience for yourself that you have new and improved thoughts and feelings about, that you have a new and improved response to, that you have a new and improved belief about yourself, and it creates a new and improved mindset, which is, in many ways, like new and improved behaviors. And you keep cycling, and this is how you build a mindset.
I love that. Yeah. I would think that creating new behaviors would be a logical next step, but is that the case? Is there a case where some people do change their mindset but don't actually change their actions?
Yeah, I think it's a process oftentimes. I wish I could change overnight just like that. Trust me, there's so many things about myself that I don't like or love. And I have to think, okay, how can I get over this hump, or how can I get over this mental block? And sometimes it really is a process. And one of the things that I find that is part of the process is something called exposure therapy. And it doesn't really matter how someone might get over a fear, it kind of funnels down back to exposing yourself to the thing that you fear, or engaging with the thing that you fear. And so at some point, you got to face it head on in order for you to accomplish or achieve the intended result. And you have to face that fear, whatever it is. So sometimes that process might take a few hours, days, weeks, months, and sometimes it takes years.
Wow. Yeah. It was interesting because I was listening to a book today, and the gentleman who was talking has been through a lot of personal development and personal issues. And it was his awareness, or his becoming aware of something that happened to him it was just an exchange between him and his dad. And he said, when I tell the story, it doesn't really sound all that deep and difficult. He said, but for me, yes, that went right down to my core, and I still can see it, feel it, hear it. And it was a matter of shifting my perception of myself. Like you said, that wasn't me anymore.
This is such an interesting topic, because I was working with a therapist, and she was one of my friends in Canada, and we were visiting. We had gone to college together, and we were talking about therapy. And she said, would you like to go through a session just for fun? And I said, that sounds wonderful. So we began to talk about how to think about therapy and mindset. Mm-hmm. And so she asked me a question. It was the very first question she asked me. She goes, what happened? And I said, I have no idea what you're talking about. And she said, everybody has a what happened story. And I said, I honestly couldn't tell you what happened. I don't have a lot of childhood trauma. But she said, think about your home life. And I said, yeah, I can't really think of much after a few minutes. And then she said, what happened at school? And I thought, and then it came to me. And I was as shocked as anyone. And I remember being in the 10th or 11th grade, and I was taking a class called GeoTrig, and I didn't know what GeoTrig even was. Like, I did not belong in that class. I played football. I was part of the jock crowd. School wasn't my strong point. But I'm in this class, and I'm in this GeoTrig class, and I don't belong there because I'm not smart enough. And the teacher made fun of me, because he was he didn't like the athletes in the school. And so he had he looked for opportunities, I think, to make fun of athletes and just poke them a little bit. But that poking really hurt my feelings, if I was going to be honest. And so how do you think I felt every time I went to this class, especially when he put me on the spot and he said, Gary, what did you get for question number 4? I'm mortified because I don't know what to say, because I don't know the answer. But I remember thinking I better make something up. So I would be a class clown and I would make up a number that had 14 digits long, and everybody would laugh. And then he would get a little bit more frustrated to make a little bit more fun of me and then move on. But that whole experience terrified me. How do you think I felt about, number one, about myself, and number two, the days leading up to that class every week? And so I had an experience of being made fun of in front of a classroom. My thoughts and feelings about that were embarrassment and obviously uncomfortable feelings. And then my belief that I created about, or my response, pardon me, was to try and be the class clown, which I'm not a class clown. I'm not that funny. But my belief about myself was, I'm not very smart. And so my mindset was, I better not prepare for college because I'm not smart enough. And so it affected, and I look back over my entire high school intending never to go to college. And so I think to myself, if I was going to coach myself and I was going to do some mindset work on myself, what would I do? Like, what would my 55-year-old self say to my 16-year-old self in that moment? And if I could be the invisible man — that was a show back in the day — but if I could be the invisible man, I've walked up to myself in that classroom and whisper in my ear, what would my 55-year-old self say to my 16-year-old self? And I think this is what I would say. I would say, Gary, there are 9 different kinds of intelligence, and math isn't one of them for you. There is linguistic intellect. There is musical intellect. There's spatial or kinetic intellect. There's all these different kinds of intellect. There's philosophical intellect, all these different kinds of intellect, and math wasn't one of mine. And so as I look back, I think to myself, they didn't offer philosophy or psych classes in high school. And then at the last second, I decided to go to college. And then all through my years of college, I struggled at the beginning. But once I started taking more psych and philosophy classes, I ended up graduating with honors for my master's degree. But I would have never guessed that in the 11th grade that I would not end up there. But a lot of it was because of the mindset that I had created for myself. And so there's an example of that equation being helpful in helping someone else decide, okay, what happened? Where does this thought or this belief come from? And typically, until we address that thing, we just sit with that until someone helps us be aware of it.
Yeah. And sometimes that's from writing, I find. Sometimes you're writing because you're upset about something. We call it a brain dump. You just write whatever comes to your mind. And sometimes it does lead to some of those situations that happened that formed your opinion of yourself. and you kept it because we never know. And it's funny too, because I have kids who are both in college, and sometimes they'll say, "Mom, you used to say this to me." And I'm like, "You remember that? I don't even remember saying that. I said like a bajillion things to you, and this is what you remember?" So it's frustrating as a parent thinking, "But what about all the things I did?"
So funny.
That's so great. I am grateful that you got over that. And yeah, I can totally understand though, coming up with the class clown. I think that's a normal kind of fallback to, if I can't be smart, I'm going to be funny. Because people like smart
yeah,
kids,
it was,
funny
it was
kids.
An ex- it certainly was an expression of my insecurity. And because I wasn't the class clown, but I didn't know what else to do. I could lash out, but that really wasn't me. I could be loud and boisterous, but that wasn't me. So you just do whatever you can to survive in the moment.
Yeah, I actually have an experience similar to that when I had moved from New Jersey to Michigan. So I had a New Jersey accent. And when I had to tell my teacher, she wasn't very nice to me. And she asked me what my class was right before there. And the way I said it, not only did she make fun of me, but the whole class did. And then she corrected me. And I was absolutely humiliated. And I can still remember the way where I was standing, how she said it to me. It was just absolutely humiliating. And I had no recourse. I couldn't be funny either.
Yeah, I think there's a pattern here, right? Number one is an awareness of either the experience or the emotions that we're feeling or the thoughts that we had or how we responded. But that awareness is really the first step. And that it takes a safe environment, I think, as well, for us to be able to express those things or even think about them. The second stage might be, what can I teach someone, or how can I educate someone? So education really is that next phase where, yeah, there are 9 different kinds of intelligence. Most people don't even understand or know that there are different kinds of intelligence. So it's not that we're not intelligent. We just might not be intelligent or have a lot of aptitude in a particular area of intellect or education. And then the third area is, how do I integrate this or apply this into my life so that I can have some sort of some kinetic interaction with the solution? Like, how do I face my fears and what steps can I take so that this is not so scary for me? In fact, even doing podcasts for me when I first started was just, I was mortified to do podcasts. And so here I am hundreds of podcasts later, just feeling pretty at home. But the only way for me to get over that is not to think my way through it. It's really just to expose myself to the fear that I have.
Yep. We got to move forward. Yeah. But I totally get that, because I was terrified when I was hosting podcasts too. I have a business partner. We used to do it together. And then eventually she said, "You could do that on your own." I was like, "Oh," but I love it. I love meeting people like you and hearing what a change you're making in the world. I appreciate that. So tell me a little bit about, who is your ideal client? We talked a little bit about different types of athletes and things, but tell me, like, who is listening now who is saying, "I need Gary's help"?
There are two different kinds of people. I think there are those who feel like they're asking themselves the question, what's next in my life? And the reason why I think I can be helpful to those kinds of people is because I created something called a game plan for life. So I have, number one, I have a playbook for the mind that I work with professional athletes and business people. So it's a playbook for the mind. But number two is, I have something called the game plan for life. So how could I arrange my life in such a way as it moves me constantly toward my goals and being the best version of myself? So that's a 2-day experience that I provide. But what it does is it answers what's next in my life with precision. So it's a pretty incredible experience. People fly to Seattle all the time, or they fly me to where they are, and I go through these 2 days with them. So it's called the game plan for life. And so people who are thinking about a transition or figuring out what's next in my life, or it's a person who says, how do I optimize my life so that I can accomplish and achieve everything that I think I'm capable of? And the game plan for life is the perfect tool for that. And then there's the playbook for the mind, which is people who think, man, I have to get over a couple, let's say, mental obstacles or emotional obstacles. And I just need a little bit of help on the mindset side so I can see myself doing things that I didn't think I was capable of. And so those are some of the things that we work on. And in both cases, the playbook for the mind or the game plan for life, both of them involve They're very strategic and participatory, and I provide the context, but my client always, they're the story, right? Like they provide the content. And then one of the really fun things that I've been doing recently is combining the two in something called One Day Elevate. So onedayelevate.com, where I'm taking the best of the mental performance stuff, the best of my leadership material, and the best of my business stuff. So the game plan for life, the business stuff, the mindset stuff, and putting it all in one day, and then teaching businesses how to perform at a really high level. So that's been really joyful as well.
That sounds exciting. I could see it in your face that you're getting excited about that. And a friend of mine always says, clarity equals velocity. And you are clear what path you're going, what you need to learn, you know, what direction, you can do it so much faster than when you're maybe, do I do that? You're uncertain. That's amazing. So tell everyone again, if they're listening and they're thinking, I want to get a hold of you or get a hold of one of your programs, where's the best place for them to go?
Well, you're very kind to ask. I live in two places. Number one is LinkedIn. So my name, Gary Chubik on LinkedIn. And then on Instagram, where a lot of my athletes live, my handle is Elite Mindset. And I'm the guy with the blue verified dot. So Elite Mindset on Instagram and just Gary Chubik on LinkedIn.
Perfect. All right. And Chupik is Chupik, but we'll put all those links in the show notes so people can get there really fast and easy. So my last question for you, Gary, is if you could provide one tip to make the world a better place, what would that be?
There's so many things I could say, but I think the one thing I would say is you can never control an outcome, but you can always put yourself in the best position to succeed. So don't worry about the outcome. Just worry about putting yourself in the best position to succeed. And if you can do that in every situation in your life, it's life-changing.
That's amazing. Again, Gary, thank you so much for joining me today. You've been amazing, a world of information and motivation and excitement. Thank you for doing what you do for the people you do it for. And thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us today on Blueprints for Brilliance Coaching Insights. We hope you're leaving this episode with inspiration to take your coaching business and your life to the next level. If you found value in this episode, we would love it if you would subscribe and share it with someone else who you think might benefit from hearing it. Thanks, and we'll see you in the next episode.